This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and thank you for joining us this evening. Week 5 of the college football season and week 4 of the NFL is in the books. And I'm here this evening to break it all down, talk about the prospects and the players who stood out on film in the box score, take a look ahead to next week, and kind of just share my thoughts on a lot of the draft-eligible prospects, NFL rookies, and some underclassmen that really stood out and warranted some attention this week. So I'm going to get right into it with the NFL draft report for this past week. I'm going to start at the quarterback position because I think there's a couple of quarterbacks that really warrant some discussion. And the first one I want to talk about is Will Grier out of West Virginia. This past week, he was 42. He led his team to a 42-34 victory over Texas Tech. He threw 370 yards and 3 touchdowns. Will Grier is one of those players who, listen, every week he's going to put up stats in that offense. Wide open, air raid, up-tempo type passing offense. He's going to put up stats. But what I'm seeing this year from him is very much what I thought I was seeing last year from Baker Mayfield. Because last summer, I thought Baker Mayfield was a day two pick. I had questions about him transitioning to the NFL. But then during last season, you started to see that even in that air raid, that type of offense that might not transition perfectly to the NFL, you saw Mayfield going through progressions, making reads, making NFL caliber throws. I think that's what I see out of Will Grier. And I think it's not only the scheme and offense that he plays in, but I think his ability to move around in the pocket, his ability to play off structure is so important right now in what we're seeing in the NFL right now on a regular basis. Offensive line play is really deteriorated, and teams are looking for those quarterbacks who can play on the move, you can move the launch point. You can do things to try to protect the offensive line. And I think Will Grier offers that capability. I think he's got enough arm talent to make every NFL pro. I do think he can go through progressions. I think he can play in that up-tempo style offense, spread the ball out, get it out quickly, get it out to his playmakers. But I do believe he has some Baker Mayfield traits to him. I think he's a guy who's pushing his way into round one consideration. I'm intrigued by him. I'm excited to see how the rest of the season plays out with Will Grier. I think his stock is squarely up, and I'm excited to kind of see if, similar to what Mayfield did last year. Now, no one expected Mayfield, even during last season, to push his way into, you know, first pick in the draft status, but it'd be interesting to see if Grier can push his way up into, you know, that first round, not maybe overall top pick like Mayfield last year, but that first round consideration across the board for most evaluators, you know, and people on draft Twitter. Another quarterback I want to talk about is Dwayne Haskins. I brought him up last week. We don't know if he's going to come out, but he's a redshirt sophomore. He's definitely eligible for the 2019 NFL draft. This week, he led Ohio State to the victory over Penn State, 27-26. He was 22 of 39. 270 yards and 3 touchdowns. Haskins is a guy who every time I watch him play, I just come away more impressed. Now, maybe he didn't put up the gaudy stats that he had put up, you know, previous weeks when they were just blowing teams out. But I watched that game and I see a lot of to like about him. I think he's got the arm talent to make every pro. Another guy, his athleticism, very much, you know, in a Deshaun Watson type vein to move around, make plays in the pocket, take off when he needs to. Haskins is a guy who, again, it's going to be fascinating to see if he comes out. But if he does, I think we're talking about a guy that could squarely be in the top 10 radar, right there up there with Justin Herbert as maybe the top 2 quarterbacks in the 2018 NFL draft. On the flip side of that game, Trace McSorley threw over 286 yards, 2 touchdowns. He also had a big day rushing on the ground as well. McSorley is one of those guys who I've talked a lot about. Really, really good college player. Not sure he translates to the NFL in terms of his size, his arm talent. But here's the thing. The NFL is changing. You know, so who's to say McSorley can't be a backup or third string quarterback on teams. You know, we've seen guys like Case Keenum. You know, we've seen guys like that who put up, you know, gaudy stats in college, didn't think they could translate, were late round picks. And now, you know, look at what Case Keenum's doing. Now, you know, listen, I think there's a greater chance that McSorley doesn't have a productive NFL career, but I think the old guard that would basically look at his size, look at his stature, look at the way he plays and immediately cross his name off, I think that's kind of went by the wayside in today's NFL. I think that stuff matters a little bit, but I think people have a more open mind to guys that maybe don't check off those typical size, you know, and weight measurements in the past. You know, and you can put Jake Browning in that mix too, another guy out of Washington, very much like Trace McSorley, good college player. How does he translate? I have questions about him, but we're seeing these guys put up production in college. They might get a chance, whether they're a late round pick, UDFA free agent, you know, and then they're going to get an opportunity to show their skill sets, you know, to the NFL teams, you know, during training camp, preseason games, et cetera, et cetera. And it's going to be fun to see if any of these guys could kind of make it. Staying with that small theme, I want to talk about Mackenzie Milton out of UCF. 328 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, he's right there in that mix too. I mean, 5'11", 185 pounds. But when you watch him play, you know, he seems to play bigger than he is. He's another guy who throws with great anticipation, great touch, you know, can move around in the pocket, uses mobility to his advantage, can play off structure. Milton is another guy who, you know, is willing to put the ball, push the ball vertically down the field. He's a guy who, again, curious to see what the NFL thinks of him, curious to see, you know, how his game translates, you know, when it's time for the NFL. But he's another guy kind of in that mold of McSorley, kind of in that mode of Jake Browning. How does their game translate? Does the NFL overlook their size and weight dimensions and looks at a guy who can play off structure, can move the launch point, can throw on the run, has some athleticism to his game? What do they think of those type of players? You know, are they undrafted? Are they late round guys? Are they guys that don't even make, you know, a practice squad? It's going to be fun to watch those guys closely and kind of differentiate between them. Another quarterback I want to talk about is DeAndre Francois. He's a guy who I've been very high on, you know, for 2 years, obviously suffered a season ending injury last year in the first game to Alabama, really started out slow this year. Florida State has struggled as a team, and they were playing poor against Louisville. And then the second half, Francois led the team back. You know, that's two good games now I've seen out of him. He was 16 of 27, 294 yards, and 4 touchdowns. I still think DeAndre Francois has an NFL-caliber skill set. I think he's got the arm talent to make every throw. I think he can throw in anticipation and touch. I love his aggressiveness, willing to push the ball vertically down the field. I think he can go through progressions. You know, when we saw him playing the Jimbo Fisher offense, I thought he did a good job with all of that stuff. So now he's playing in a little bit different style scheme, obviously. You know, so again, are there question marks? Yeah, his accuracy is something that has to, you know, improve upon for sure. But I think he can go through progressions. I think he's very tough, willing to stand tall in the pocket, make a play when a defensive player is barreling down on him. He checks off boxes for me that I look for when I'm watching college football and evaluating quarterbacks. I think he can stand tall in the pocket in the NFL and make a play in a big moment. And he just seems to have that kind of, you know, attitude where I don't care how I've looked early in the game, I'm going to come back, I'm going to make a big play. And we saw that with Florida State really struggling this week, and then him making some big plays down the stretch. Another quarterback I want to talk about, obviously Justin Herbert this week, 225 yards, 2 touchdowns. Not a great statistical game, you know, for what we're used to seeing from him. But again, when I watch him play, you know, besides Dwayne Haskins, if he comes out, I'll keep saying that I think Justin Herbert is separating himself from the field a little bit. I think Justin Herbert's starting to put himself, you know, on a level of what we thought about the guys last year in terms of Sam Darnold, in terms of Josh Rosen, you know, and those guys. I think that's the kind of caliber prospect he is. You know, I know as a fan of the Giants, I would love, you know, for the Giants to get an opportunity to take Herbert, you know, somewhere in the top 10, if that's where the Giants are picking again. And it seems that would be the what it's going to be like, most likely, you know, at season 10. But Herbert is just a guy who I really am impressed with. He's got the size, he's got the arm talent, he's got the mobility and athleticism. You know, we're seeing him, you know, again, things like progression reading, decision making, you know, those are things that I think, you know, he's improving upon. And I think he's a guy who NFL teams are really going to, you know, fall for. And you're looking at a guy who's going to be a top five, top eight pick, I think, when all is said and done in the 2019 NFL draft. If we transition this to the running backs, I want to take an opportunity to talk about Benny Snell out of Kentucky. This past week, he had 99 yards and a touchdown, but just really want to talk more about the player. You know, he's a guy who I think NFL teams will like him for the role that I think he serves. I think he's a two down between the tackles type thumper. I think he's a guy who could handle a heavy workload. He can push the pile. You know, he's going to take what you can get. You know, that's the kind of player, you know, listen, guys like Chris Carson, you know, guys like, you know, other players of that ilk. I think that's what Benny Snell is. Now, maybe he doesn't even test out as good as Chris Carson did, you know, but I think that's the kind of guy he is, a between the tackles, two down, physical guy who's going to push the pile, short yardage, goal line, early down guy. I think that's what Benny Snell is. I don't think he has a lot of versatility to his game. I don't think he's much of a receiving threat or a guy who can play in space, but I do like his physique, his stature, how hard he runs, his aggressiveness, his balance. I think that's all going to serve him well as a guy who's going to be a day three pick in the NFL draft. Another guy, obviously Miles Sanders, I talked a lot about last week, so I'm going to skip him from that Ohio State Penn State game. I do want to talk about Mike Weber, because Mike Weber is a guy I talked a little bit about in the summer, and I kind of want to cycle back to him here and talk about him, because I think he's a guy who's going to be better than maybe what his college production looks like. I think he's the guy who's going to be a day three type prospect, but I think if given the opportunity, he's a guy that could emerge and be a pretty solid, you know, day three find. I like his size. I think he runs tough. I think he runs physical. I think he's got some receiving ability in his game. I think he's got some quickness and agility in the open field. So a guy like Benny Snell, I'd be higher on Mike Weber, I think, because I think he's got a little bit more, you know, elusiveness and quickness, especially in the open field, and to make some stuff happen when it isn't there. Then I think Benny Snell's more of, you know, grind it out, you know, get what's there, push the pile a little bit. I think Mike Weber has a little bit untapped potential and upside to his game that's intriguing to me. If we take this to the wide receiver position, first name I wanted to bring up is Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma. His quarterback, I could have brought him up in the quarterback section, Kyler Murray, 17 of 21, 432 yards and 6 touchdowns. Fantastic year, but he's off the baseball after this season. He was early first-round pick to the Oakland A's. The deal was he was going to play one season at Oklahoma, and then he was going to report to, you know, the minor league team for the A's. So I want to take this over opportunity to talk about his wide receiver, Marquise Brown, a guy, Hollywood, who I talked about before the season started. He's in my top 8 wide receivers. We're seeing the importance of having guys that can take the top off defenses. We're seeing DeSean Jackson this year and the effect that he's had. We've seen John Brown get over his injuries and the impact he's had. You know, we've seen what Will Fuller can do, you know, in terms of getting vertical. A guy like Marquise Brown has a calling card. The NFL teams are going to be intrigued by that. I know somebody might say, well, look at John Ross. He hasn't materialized. I understand it. That's not going to stop NFL teams from still willing to take a chance on these guys who have that rare skill set. So I think Marquise Brown is a guy who is going to see his stock rise. I could see him being a second round pick, you know, and offer that team a unique, dynamic playmaker who can get vertical and add a totally different dimension to a team's offense. Speaking of another guy who could add a very different dimension to an offense, Paris Campbell out of Ohio State. I think he's going to intrigue NFL teams for his versatility. He's a guy who can use it in a lot of different ways. You want to use him as a traditional slot? You can. You want to use him on end of rounds, you know, in plays like that? You can. You want to use him on screens? You want to use him vertically? All different things. Quick slants. You can manufacture touches for him. You can use him more as a wide receiver. I think he can be a return guy as well. Paris Campbell's a playmaker who, again, teams are looking for those mismatches on a regular basis. We're seeing why the running back being utilized at a backfield receiving has become so prevalent at the NFL level. It's because, you know, offensive-minded coordinators and coaches are really starting to maximize the skill sets of all their players. I think a team's going to get Paris Campbell in their locker room. They're going to find ways to utilize the skill set. I think he's a top 100 pick. I could see him being a round three guy that offers something unique to an offense and really be a different type of weapon than maybe what a team has. If we check in on the Ole Miss guys, like we pretty much do every week, A.J. Brown, 9 for 72, D.K. Metcalf, 3 for 37. Again, two of the top wide receivers in this class. People still want to knock A.J. Brown because he doesn't check off the, you know, that great athleticism box. Didn't we just do this, guys, with Juju Smith-Schuster, who I think is the perfect comp for A.J. Brown? You know, there were so many people who, by the time Juju Smith left college, were down on him because he was nitpicking stuff. You know, he wasn't as good as early on. He didn't get vertically enough. He might not be able to create separation enough, all this stuff. And in the meantime, all he did was explode onto the scene in the NFL and really produce. And I think AJ Brown similarly is going to be a productive NFL player. I don't think, you know, the lack of athleticism, if people believe that is true, is going to really hurt him in terms of how he plays and how he wins. He wins with physicality. He wins with, you know, using his body to his advantage. I love his hand. I think he's going to be a very good player at the next level. Is he worth the first round pick? I don't know. Maybe late first, early second. I don't think, you know, I think people were overhyping this wide receiver class a little bit. I think it's a good class. I'm still not sure there's anybody that warrants top 10. I didn't think anybody from the Corey Davis, Mike Williams, John Ross deserved to go top 10. And so far, I'm starting to feel that same way with these wide receivers. I think there's a bunch of good guys. I'm not sure there's any in the Julio Jones type ilk who should be what I consider top 10 picks. Odell Beckham, Mike Evans. I don't think there's anybody like that on this level in this class. I think AJ Brown's my favorite. I think he probably should be a guy who maybe is picked in the late first round, you know, 18 to 32, somewhere, you know, in that vicinity, more than, you know, a guy top five, top eight. And last guy I want to talk about the wide receiver position is two Louisville wide receivers, Des Fitzpatrick and Jalen Smith. Matt and I talked a lot about those guys. Matt and I were both very high on Des Fitzpatrick. He's a guy, again, is he going to come out? Maybe, maybe not. You know, good chance he probably stays in. Jalen Smith, another Louisville wide receiver. You know, Louisville as a whole has strong wide receivers. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of, you know, who continues to emerge this year. Is anybody become, you know, the guy that NFL teams are most talking about? I still think that's Fitzpatrick upside is higher than any of the other Louisville wide receivers. I think if he comes out, the NFL teams are going to be intrigued by him as a day two prospect. If he goes back to school, I think he can continue to elevate his way that maybe he's a guy considered, you know, in round one down the line, if he continues to refine his skill sets, his route running, and his overall game. And if we finish up with the NFL draft report with the tight end position, Alzay Mack had one catch for 35 yards and one touchdown. Caden Smith had one catch for 4 yards. Obviously, Notre Dame played Stanford this week, so I want to use this opportunity to talk about these guys. I like both of those guys. I think Alzay Mack is a guy who's got some untapped potential. I like his athleticism. He's became a better blocker, better, more well-rounded player. You know, obviously had some issues early on in his career there. Caden Smith is a guy who reminds me of a Jason Witten type. He's not going to blow anyone away with athleticism, you know, but he uses his body well. He boxes out defenders well. He's got good hands, and he can win at the catch point. Caden Smith is a guy who, again, I think he could be a day two prospect in the round two, round three range. I don't think he's a round one guy. I think they're looking for special athletes. You know, think Noah Fant in that regards, in terms of the type of tight ends that weren't going in round one. So there it is, the NFL draft report for this past week. Before we transition to the Devy Slant, want to take a quick word from our sponsor over at the SquadQL. If you want an unfair advantage to dominate your fantasy football league, well, look no further and download SquadQL, the only mobile app you need to crush your friends and rivals with this year. SquadQL recommends the best starting lineup for you each week based on your starters, bench players, and free agent pool. You may ask, how does SquadQL actually do this? The app connects directly with your Yahoo, ESPN, and CBS leagues, pulling in your actual roster and your league scoring system. SquadQL provides waiver and trade recommendations, plus the app gives you player rankings each week, and it's all based on your league settings. SquadQL truly is your go-to app this fantasy football season. Head over to SquadQL.com to download SquadQL, your all-in-one fantasy football manager. SquadQL is brought to you by the creators of RotoQL, the leading daily fantasy lineup optimizer trusted by 100,000 DFS players. You could also download RotoQL for free for both Apple and Android. As we take this to the Devy slant, a couple prospects that I wanted to talk about right at the top. I mean, the drama going on in Clemson. Obviously, Kelly Bryant decides to leave Clemson once Trevor Lawrence is named the starter last week. Then Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, you know, injured throughout the game. Clemson had to come back and pull off a miracle win against Syracuse with their backup quarterback, guy who started out originally as their third string quarterback this year. It sounds like Trevor Lawrence will be ready to go this year. I think we're going to see a guy, tremendous talent. If you talk about, you know, in terms of pure talent at the quarterback position, I'm not sure Trevor Lawrence is not number one in terms of all of college football. He's right up there in terms of, you know, besides Tua, I think Trevor Lawrence might be the guy who has the most upside or the most talent of any quarterback in college football. Now, listen, there's a lot of great quarterbacks. I could say Jake Fromm. I can, you know, other people will say Tua. You know, other people will say Justin Fields. All of these guys really good, but I think Trevor Lawrence is in the short list of quarterbacks in college football that have the most upside, the most potential, who are going to be on your radar for years and being talked about. Think about when Andrew Luck was at Stanford, how long he was being talked about as the guy who was going to be the first pick in the draft. Think about how long Josh Rosen was being talked about as an early prospect. I think Trevor Lawrence, we're going to see it this whole year, and then we're going to see it his whole sophomore year, and then we're going to see it his whole junior year. This is a guy who, in the just fast forward 3 years, he's going to be a top five, top 10 pick. I would be really surprised if that's not the case down the line. That's how highly I think of his overall game. A couple running backs to talk about. Stay right there in the Clemson game. Travis Etienne, a guy who Matt was really high on before the season started as a guy who can break out this year. He's breaking out. 27 carries, 203 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's 5'10", 206 pounds. I feel like he runs bigger than that, runs faster, runs harder than that. He's a guy who carried that Clemson offense down the stretch, you know, led them to the comeback victory. He's a guy who, again, so many future running backs. The running back class, you know, of 2020 is going to be so strong, you know, with the Cam Akers of the world and the DeAndre Swifts of the world and the J.K. Dobbins and all those guys. And Etienne is going to be another guy on that list. You know, A.J. Dillon, you know, Jonathan Taylor, the list goes on and on and on. And Travis Etienne is going to be a guy who needs to be mentioned, you know, with those guys as one of, you know, as a top, you know, running back in the Devy community as a guy who really is going to be fun to watch and talk about, you know, as his future NFL, you know, upside and potential as we see it. I already mentioned DeAndre Swift and J.K. Dobbins. You know, every time I watch J.K. Dobbins, he seems to run bigger and more physical than he even is. I think some people maybe thought they had concerns about workload. Listen, Ohio State's got such a good team, and Mike Weber's a really solid back who I've already talked about tonight. So I think sometimes people don't think J.K. Dobbins can handle a heavy workload. Look around the NFL. How many guys handle 25 carries anymore? It's rare. You know, J.K. Dobbins is a guy who I definitely think could be, you know, an 18 to 20 carry type guy, you know, somewhere in that mix, or 18 to 22 touches, however you want to break it down. I think he can be that at the NFL level. I think he's got his receiving ability solid. I love his burst. I love his acceleration, his contact balance. J.K. Dobbins is the real deal. To me, he's right up there, you know, with the DeAndre Swifts and Cam Akers in terms of overall talent at the running back position. We're still waiting for that Cam Akers breakout since I mentioned his name. You know, this week, again, 17 carries, 42 yards. I watch him play, and I think it's the Florida State offensive line that's holding him back. You know, other people might question his talent and ability. I'm not questioning it. If anything, I am using Florida State's poor start, especially on offense, as an opportunity to maybe go to the Cam Akers owner in your Devy leagues and try to buy low on him. I truly believe there could be a window here where maybe people are looking at more box scores, reading, you know, the press clippings on how bad Florida State is and think to themselves, if this guy was so talented, why would he not be carrying the load, breaking out, you know, and having this big statistical year if he's supposed to be the number one Devy running back prospect, or if not number one on the short list of top three or top four, you know, overall Devy players, especially at the running back position, without a doubt. No one's questioning that. Use that as an opportunity. We talk all the time about buying low on NFL rookies. Use it the same way in terms of your Devy leagues. You know, Cam Akers, slow start right now. Use it as an opportunity to try to buy him. Same thing with DeAndre Swift. If people are getting a little worried, and I don't think they should, it's just, it's Georgia. You know, Elijah Holyfield's a good player too. It's the same reason why they, you know, last year, DeAndre Swift, you know, was sharing stuff with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. They're good players. DeAndre Swift is also a very special player. His receiving ability, I think when push comes to shove to his receiving ability down the line, I think he could end up being, you know, an Alvin Kamara type player. I do believe that that's his kind of upside. Now, listen, I'm not going to say anyone's going to go into the NFL and do what Alvin Kamara did. Matt and I were the biggest Alvin Kamara fans because we didn't care about market share. We didn't care about breakout age. We didn't care that he transferred from Alabama and had off the field stuff. We didn't care about that he didn't take over the Tennessee backfield and they used, you know, they built it around, you know, Josh Dobbs and Jalen Hurd. We didn't care about any of that. We watched a film and we saw Alvin Kamara be a special player when he touched the ball. We saw contact balance, quickness, the ability to run through tackles, his receiving ability, his explosiveness. We saw all of that. It's the same stuff I see with DeAndre Swift. So again, if anybody at any point this year is feeling a little down on him because he's not putting up this monster statistical season, use it as an opportunity to buy low. DeAndre Swift is a special talent. And he's eventually going to be a special player at the NFL level. I have very little doubt about that as well. And last player I'm going to talk about is Amon St. Brown, the freshman wide receiver at USC, continues to really impress. Listen, freshman wide receivers have started to become more prevalent and more relevant, but I always feel like sometimes you see more running backs. Occasionally you see the quarterback. Sometimes I feel like wide receivers don't quickly emerge right out of the gates because these teams have so many wide receivers. There's a lot of nuance in running the in being a wide receiver, your route running, understanding all the route concepts. But St. Brown has really, you know, quickly elevated himself to be one of the top wide receivers in college football, and a guy who squarely should be a guy on your radar as a guy to get him now, get him years before. You know, if people more prefer guys who are a little bit more close to being NFL, you know, draft eligible, use that as an opportunity to buy a guy like St. Brown, because I think his upside is really high and he's already showing it as a freshman here at USC. And I think the sky is definitely the limit as a guy who could, you know, become a big time wide receiver prospect, you know, as we talk about guys, you know, in the future when their time comes up. So before we transition this to the tail of the tape, here's a quick word from our other sponsor as well. DFS players and sports bettors, listen up. No more getting crushed by the pros. With thequantedge.com, you will have the tools you need to play like a pro. With a lineup optimizer, an injury tool, wide receiver cornerback matchups, and a head-to-head tool, you will be armed with everything you need to win. Make up to 150 lineups in seconds, get a true understanding of a player's value, see the week's matchups to exploit, and compare two players to help you make that decision you were on the fence about at thequantedge.com. It doesn't stop with groundbreaking tools. With 10 industry experts on staff, you also get exclusive access to over 20 betting and fantasy articles and podcasts a week, and can join the TQE community by participating in the premium membership chat. We at Saturday Sunday Football have a special deal for our loyal listeners. Using the promo code S2SEDGE, you get 10% off season-long subscriptions. Go to thequantedge.com to sign up today. So as we transition this to take a look at week 6 and the tail of the tape and some prospects that jump out at you, right off the bat, I talked about a couple of these guys already, but number 19, Texas versus number 7, Oklahoma. I'm really excited to watch the Sooners in this game. How does Kyler Murray do? You know, big rivalry, Texas-Oklahoma, a lot of pressure. How does Murray look? The way he's handled himself this year, I expect him to look fantastic, but you know, Texas, Oklahoma, you know, throw the records out, throw the rankings out. It's always a very competitive game that can, you know, easily turn one way or the other. And then I'm looking forward to a couple of the playmakers on Oklahoma's side. I already mentioned Marquise Brown. Can he get deep and beat the Texas secondary for a couple big plays? That'll be closely on my radar. And then Trey Sermon, filling in for the injured Rodney Anderson. Trey Sermon was a guy Matt talked up a little bit about in the summer as a guy he liked, his overall, you know, outlook. How does Sermon do in this game as well? Obviously, Tom Herman of Texas was going to look to try to pull off the big upset this week. That's one of his specialty, one of his calling cards. It's been that his whole coaching career. So it's going to be fun to see if he can slow down this trio of Oklahoma Sooners and see if they can pull off the upset this week. So those three guys are squarely on my radar in terms of prospects to watch in that game. Another game that really has me intrigued is Boston College, NC State. And the reason why is a couple different prospects. One is A.J. Dillon, the running back out of Boston College. Big, bruising, physical runner. Reminds me of a little bit more athletic Andre Williams, who was really productive at Boston College. I think some people maybe are a little bit higher on A.J. Dillon in terms of NFL status. I think he's a guy who's a round three, round four guy. Think about where, you know, guys like James Conner went. Think about where guys like Dante Foreman went. You know, Samaje Perine. I would put him, you know, better than those guys, but not as high as guys like Nick Chubb, you know, Kerryon Johnson, stuff like that. So that's where I stand on him right now. Now, maybe, you know, after the season, I go back and watch his film in anticipation of him being draft eligible, you know, for the following draft, and I watch him and I think differently. But what I've seen him right now, I put him more in that mold, you know, a better version of James Conner and those guys in terms of what their draft prospect status would look like than the guys last year, like Nick Chubb, Kerryon Johnson, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then two guys on NC State I'm looking for. I haven't talked about him since the summer, and that's Kelvin Harmon. He's kind of went under the radar, but he's had a couple really big games. You know, six catches, 150 yards, eight catches, 129 yards. He's one of my favorite wide receiver prospects in the country. I talked about A.J. Brown. Kelvin Harmon is right there, number two on my list as top wide receiver prospects available for the 2019 NFL draft. And I don't think he gets a lot of attention. I don't think he gets the attention that he deserves or warrants. He's a guy who might be able to be had in Devy leagues right now because I just don't think you see a lot of people talking about him. I think he's a day two prospect. I think he's one of the better prospects that's going to be in the wide receiver class this upcoming draft. And I think he's a guy that you can maybe buy a little bit on the cheaper side right now because I just don't think he's getting the national attention that the DK Metcalfs of the world are getting and other players. And I think Calvin Harmon's a better and more well-rounded player than a guy like DK Metcalf. You know, DK Metcalf maybe has the higher ceiling, but I think Calvin Harmon's got a pretty high ceiling and a much higher floor than a guy like DK Metcalf. I've compared his game to a guy like Hakeem Nicks. When Hakeem Nicks was really good, he was a first-round pick. He had a couple really, really, you know, top-level statistical production seasons. You know, injuries kind of sapped Hakeem Nicks of his career. But I like Calvin Harmon's game. Another guy you think, Davante Adams. I think he profiles very similar to a Davante Adams, but maybe even with a little bit more athleticism as well. So I'll be watching Calvin Harmon and then quarterback of NC State, Ryan Finley. He's a guy who, again, I think he's a day two type prospect. You haven't heard a lot about him this year. You know, last year I felt like NC State was, you know, squarely being talked about a lot because of that elite defensive line and Bradley Chubb, you know, and I think this year they're flying a little bit more under the radar, but I think Ryan Finley is a quality prospect. I think he's a day two type guy. Probably more round three in my eyes. I think, you know, he's better than some guys we've seen going round three, like CJ Beathard and Davis Webb. I think he's better than that. So I'm excited to kind of see how Finley does the rest of this year and in the pre-draft process. Another guy I'm looking forward to in the LSU-Florida matchup. For LSU, I want to take a look at freshman wide receiver Terrence Marshall. He's a guy that Matt squarely put on my radar last year, you know, when we were talking about the high school all-star games and then when we were discussing some of the freshman notebook. How does he look? He's been taking on a bigger role in that offense. And then on the other side, Jordan Scarlett. This is an opportunity. A guy who's kind of been forgotten, was suspended for years, came back this year, has been okay. You know, how does he look in this matchup? You know, Florida, again, still struggling to get much going offensively. LSU's been one of the surprise teams in the country, you know, looking really impressive. Obviously, they had that big comeback win a couple of weeks ago by Auburn. So I think LSU keeps it going in this game. But I'm interested to see Marshall on the LSU side and then Scarlett, you know, for the Gators. Auburn, Mississippi State, Jared Stidham. Again, I haven't brought him up this week, but Jared Stidham, again, is a guy. Before the season started, he was number two on my quarterback list, you know, right behind Justin Herbert. I think, you know, the gap, like I said last week, continues to close. I think guys like Will Grier are basically right there with Jared Stidham. And I think Dwayne Haskins has passed him for me. I truly believe that. Stidham, again, really solid, good arm talent. I still, like I said in the past, want to see more out of him, have that, you know, fantastic game where he throws for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. I just don't know if it's going to happen in the Auburn offense. I truly believe, you know, it wasn't the best offense for him when he transferred out of Baylor. I didn't think it was the ideal landing fit. Obviously, Auburn's a tremendous program, but I just thought for his skill set and his ultimate goal of reaching, you know, being a early first round pick, you know, and being an NFL caliber prospect, I didn't know if it was a perfect landing spot. Now, I still think he's a guy that will intrigue NFL teams because they look past statistics and schemes in college, and they're looking for individual traits. And I do think he has them. But I do sometimes think I want a little bit more out of Stidham. So Stidham's a guy still on the round one radar. But let's see how the rest of the year plays out. If he's a guy we're thinking like has top 10 upside, or he's a guy that more we're talking late round one, maybe he falls to the beginning of round two, or does he fall somewhere in the middle of that range? And then ND, Virginia Tech, I already mentioned Alize Mack. Two guys I want to bring up is Chase Claypool. He's another wide receiver, big-bodied guy, can go up and get it. Matt was a big fan, talked him up in the, you know, the before the season started in the scouting notebook. A lot of upside, a lot of potential there. And then Cole Kmet, he's, you know, we've talked about Alize Mack, but Cole Kmet could be one of the best tight end prospects in all of college football, even though he's not draft eligible yet. You know, besides Noah Fant, you know, Cole Kmet could be one of the top, you know, tight end prospects in all of college football. You know, when you talk about underclassmen as well, how does he look in this game? You know, both tight ends. How does Notre Dame utilize Cole Kmet and Alize Mack? And then obviously, you know, Chase Claypool, how does he look in this game as well? As Notre Dame's offense has been really impressive, you know, the last couple of weeks. You know, Ian Book is just really taking the reins and the leader of that team and is putting up really good passing and rushing statistics as he leads the Notre Dame offense. And Notre Dame's looking strong. They're going to be favored in every game the rest of the year. They're looking like a team that could be on the fast track to a playoff berth. You know, and then, you know, obviously you got teams like, you know, Alabama and Georgia, and I think Ohio State's on their way to there. You know, so it's going to be fun to see Notre Dame and how they end up looking the rest of this year. And do they get an opportunity in the playoff to take on, you know, one of the powerhouses, you know, from the SEC, you know, or the Buckeyes, you know, or another team like Clemson as well, some of the other big time powerhouses as well. Before we transition this to the final segment of the night, which is the NFL Rookie Report, I also wanted to take this time again to let our listeners know that the 2019, you know, Saturday to Sunday premium notebooks are available. They've been available since the beginning of September. Remember, for $9.99, you get access to all four notebooks. That's the 2019 Scouting Notebook, which already has over 20 running back profiles, 24 wide receiver profiles, 12 tight end profiles, 16 quarterback profiles. We will update it and add to it throughout the season, and obviously a big update after the college football season, especially when we know who's declaring and who's not. We'll separate it into tabs that are guys who are going to be in the draft, other draft eligible prospects that decide to stay in school as well, how they win, draft projection, NFL scheme and fit role, strengths, weaknesses, specialized things for each position like wide receivers, route running, hands, running backs, you know, pass catching, blocking, tight ends, blocking, receiving, really have it covered, updated throughout the year. So it's not stagnant. It's not the only time we update it before the season starts. So we make changes based on what we see this season as well. And then watching film after the season, you know, in the pre-draft months as well. You also get the Saturday to Sunday rankings notebook. It has our draft eligible rankings. It has our Devy rankings. It has our NFL rookie rankings updated frequently as well. And then in February, March, you get the 2019 freshman notebook, which will have player profiles on the top 40 or 50 incoming freshmen. And then a couple weeks before the NFL draft, you get the draft projections notebook that has a tab for every single player, offense and defense, how we expect them to come off the board, notes, their combine measurements, combine metrics, and also a tab with the projected top 32, top 100 and every pick in the NFL draft. So let's close out the night with the NFL rookie report for week four. If we start with the quarterback position, obviously a lot to discuss now that four quarterbacks have taken the reins. Obviously, Baker Mayfield lost the heartbreaker 45-42 to the Oakland Raiders. His stats didn't look as good as he actually played. He had some drops. He had some miscommunication issues with his wide receivers. But the energy he's brought that team, you just see it. His ability to play off structure, to fire up his team, his touch and anticipation. Baker Mayfield is going to be a big-time player. I'm not sure the Browns are going to fully see the success that he's going to have until they move on from Hugh Jackson. But Baker Mayfield is going to be sooner rather than later, you know, a top 12, you know, dynasty quarterback, a guy who's putting up, you know, weekly stats, even though right now so many people are putting up weekly QB1 stats. I think Baker Mayfield is a guy already on the radar, top 10, top 12 dynasty quarterbacks moving forward. Josh Rosen got his first start this week for the Cardinals. You saw some glimpses of some of the throws that Rosen's capable of making. He's willing to push the ball vertically down the field. I think that's a big plus in the NFL. Right now, his offensive line play is horrid. He doesn't have a lot of weapons. So Rosen's going to be very inconsistent. He's going to have some really, really down weeks. But if you look through and you look closely and watch the throws, you see some special throws. You see a player who's got a little bit of a you know, gunslinger's mentality, who's willing to push the ball down the field. I think that's going to reap benefits down the line. Sam Darnold struggled again this week. Not, you know, too surprising considering he's facing the Jaguars. Again, right now, a lot of checkdowns, a lot of short stuff. I think Darnold is a guy who needs some time. The Jets need to build up the roster around it. They got to get a better running game. They got to get some more playmakers. They got to solidify the old line. I am not worried on Darnold. If anything, use it as a window to buy him maybe in two quarterback leagues or, you know, 16-team dynasty leagues where right now maybe you can get him a little bit on the cheaper. I like Darnold's overall, you know, long-term outlook. And Josh Allen really struggled this week against the Packers. I mean, their offensive line play, their run game, their receivers. I mean, he's got no help right now. Allen looks like a guy who, again, he's already shown signs that he can play, and we've already had that conversation. So I'm not going to go back, and I don't care what his stats are right now. If anyone is saying, oh, see, this is what Josh Allen is, no. I mean, if you're going to judge him on this, then you should be saying Sam Darnold can't play in the NFL, Josh Rosen can't play in the NFL. Josh Allen has already shown why he was worthy of being, you know, a top 10 quarterback. His arm talent, his athleticism, some of the things he can do and the throws that he can make. For them, just like Rosen and just like Darnold, the team around him has to get better. The offensive line has to get better. He can't be playing scared of getting hit. He's got to get better weapons, better receivers to get open. He's got to get the ground game going better. All of them are in very similar situations. If we take this to the running back position, Saquon Barkley, third game in a row with 100 total yards. Obviously, one of the premier running back talents already in the NFL. The only thing holding him back is maybe that Giants offense, and that offensive line is definitely struggling right now. Eli struggling, the offensive line struggling. So overall, you know, touchdown upside might be lacking with Barkley right now, but that's about it. Breakout running back, rookie running back of the week, Sony Michel, took on a big lion's share of the carries in the New England offense. Now with Rex Burkhead injured, Michel, you know, answered the bell with over 100 yards rushing, looked really good. He'd be a guy who, he was my number two guy on my draft board throughout the whole summer. I didn't change it even after he got injured. I had the second pick in one of my, you know, hometown dynasty drafts. I took Sony Michel after Barkley went one. I never wavered on that. He's been my number two since the summer. He's been my number two from soon after the NFL draft. Looked good this week. I think he's going to have a big impact down the stretch here. Kerryon Johnson, anytime he gets touches, he produces. I'm not sure why Detroit is being so adamant about giving LeGarrette Blount the touches he's getting. I think they're wasting carries. Kerryon Johnson should be getting a higher workload, and I think he can produce. He was my number three running back before the season started. He's still my number three running back. That has not changed. Nick Chubb saw three carries this week, two of them went for long touchdowns. Get him on your team now. If somebody's still worried about, you know, Carlos Hyde there, the time is coming for Nick Chubb to start working into that. And by next year, I think he's the starter on that team in a good offense with Baker Mayfield. And I think a new offensive-minded head coach next year. I think the buy-low window is going to run out real quickly if it hasn't already on Nick Chubb after those two runs. But kind of, you know, base it off only three touches. So maybe the owner is still a little frustrated with that moving forward. Go get him now. Royce Freeman, another touchdown, but he'd be a guy that I'd be selling. I think Philip Lindsay is is going to be a big part of that backfield moving forward, not just this year. I don't think it's a fluke. So I think the value you had to pay as an early first round pick or mid first round pick for Royce Freeman, I think if someone's still valuing him at that, and I'm not sure you're going to find somebody with that with the thing of Philip Lindsay, I think I'd move on from him if I could and didn't need it. But right now he's a running back. He's getting touches. He's getting carries. Right now that's as important as anything. He's still probably an RB2. I just don't know if he's going to live up to the upside that maybe people thought. Maybe he had, you know, Kareem Hunt-like upside when they drafted him, and I never thought that. And then with the emergence of Philip Lindsay, that's just not happening. Rashard Penny didn't even get many touches with Chris Carson inactive this week. I mean, listen, Penny wasn't a guy that I was that high on. I thought he was more of like a late round three pick than a first round pick. He's a guy who I had at number 8 in my, you know, dynasty rookie ranking before the season started. And he's a guy who I'm going to even move down a little bit more. I never thought he was that special of a talent. I thought the San Diego State offense created gaping holes for him. And I think we're starting to see that. Now listen, Seattle's offensive line is poor, but we saw Mike Davis rush for over 100 yards this week. We've seen Chris Carson rush for over 100 yards. When Penny's on the field, he's just not really producing. I don't think he's much of a factor in the pass game as well. I thought he was overdrafted. And again, if someone still looks at him and is like, he's a first round, you know, dynasty rookie value, I would trade him. I would trade him. Recoup that first round pick. I think you're going to be disappointed in Penny. Ronald Jones was finally active, struggled on his 10 carries this week, but I think coming out of a bye, the Bucs are going to give him an opportunity. So maybe based on his poor production early in the year, there's a little bit of a buy low window right now. I would try to get him while he's on his buy. If you liked him before the season started, I don't think you should give up on him yet. I was a fan of his game, so I do think he's a guy who right now, based, even though, you know, I had to move him down the rankings a little bit based on, you know, how the training camp played out and the start of the season, he'd be a guy who I'd still be trying to buy, because I don't think it would cost you what you paid for him. I think you might be able to get him for much less than that right now, so I'd be intrigued by him. Philip Lindsay, it's going to be hard to get him right now. I mean, because he's just producing solid RB2 stats. I don't think that's changing. I think that's the wave of the NFL now, the specialized guys. I think he's going to be continue to be a factor. And then one other guy I want to bring up is Nyheim Hines, really starting to become a factor for the Colts passing offense out of the backfield. He's a guy who very much in the Tariq Cohen mold, you know, very much in the Darren Sproles mode, the Chris Thompson mold. I think that's who Nyheim Hines could be. And it's just funny because this happens every year. Nyheim Hines, right after the draft, was a guy who was in most people's top 18, top 20 dynasty rookie rankings. And if you drafted then, that's where he was probably taken. But if you drafted in the summer, like a lot of my drafts are, Nyheim Hines was falling to like round 3 or round 4 of rookie drafts because people got so worried about training camps and the preseason. You can't let that stuff kind of bother you sometimes and overreact to if you believe in what the player can be. Nyheim Hines is a guy who we always knew was going to be an effective receiver at the next level. If we turn to the pass catchers, I'll do tight ends real quick. Hayden Hurst is coming off of, I think he's been injured the first couple of weeks, so we're finally going to get to see him make his debut. Dallas Goedert, we talked about him last week. I knew he was probably going to struggle with Alshon Jeffrey coming back. Go buy him now. There's going to be a buy low window for a period of time here, and I think it's a perfect opportunity to go offer a late second or a third round rookie pick for Dallas Goedert. Try to get him on your roster. I think in the long run, it's going to pay off. At the wide receiver position, Calvin Ridley, another 2 touchdowns. We talked about him last week. I'm not going to bring it up every week, but just watch the guy play. His route running is so crisp. He's so precise, and it's why he was my number one wide receiver and why I loved him coming out of college and didn't care about, you know, the metrics and market share and all that stuff. Very precise route runner. Love his overall game. Think he's a guy, you know, who's going to have some peaks and valleys. I mean, he's not going to do this every week. I mean, he's still only playing like 55 to 60% of the snaps, you know, with Julio playing the majority and obviously Mohamed Sue still playing a big, you know, target snap count as well. But Ridley's a guy. I love his overall upside. I don't even know if anybody coming out this upcoming draft I'm going to like as much as I like Ridley, even though Ridley didn't profile as a number one wide receiver last year because, you know, of his size and stuff. But to me, he was always in that Reggie Wayne type mold. And, you know, I thought it was going to be great if he had an opportunity to play with an elite number one wide receiver to start his career. And that's what he's doing. And I think in the long run, he'll develop to be a number one wide receiver. But, you know, for now, that'll still be Julio at the top of that for a while, even though Ridley's been out producing him based on those touchdown numbers in fantasy. DJ Moore, we're waiting to see more opportunity. He's a hold at this point. Christian Kirk's a hold. I think he'll eventually, we won't see the best of Kirk till Larry Fitzgerald's gone and Kirk's playing officially in the slot. I think James Washington's a hold or a buy low. I think DJ Moore and James Washington and Anthony Miller are all buy lows right now. I think those guys, you know, if the owner who has them is a little frustrated, I think you could buy, if you could buy any of those guys right now, I would. I still believe in the talent. Antonio Callaway, a lot of drops and, you know, some issues in terms of route concepts, mental lapses. But if you watch him play closely, watch, you know, the film, you know, on, you know, that on Game Rewind and Game Pass, Antonio Callaway is getting open and he's getting open pretty easily. And Baker Mayfield is targeting him relentlessly. I know you guys came out and said maybe, you know, maybe less is more for him and we got to, you know, ease up on the targets and the snaps and maybe he'll produce more. I still love the talent that Callaway possesses, his route running, his quickness. Now he's got to hold on to the football. If he can't do that, you know, he's no good to anybody. But if that comes together and he starts holding on to the football, his route running ability and his ability to separate and get open, I'm impressed with. Michael Gallup right now is just a hold. He's not really a big part of that Dallas offense. Same thing with Dante Pettis. Tre'Quan Smith is a guy who I'd be buying low on. If you listen to the Giants-Saints game, you know, the announcers in that game were talking about what Sean Payton thinks of Tre'Quan Smith and how much he likes him. He's a guy, keep in the back of your mind, buy him low. I think down the line this year or next year, Tre'Quan Smith's going to pay off. And then the last guy I'm going to talk about, the debut of Kiki Kuti, bursted onto the scene, really productive, a favorite of Sigmund Bloom, a guy who's a dynamite, you know, after the catch guy, but could also get vertical, one of those premier slot guys who can do everything. Kuti's a guy who I think is really going to settle in there as an effective player for the Texans and be that third weapon that they have there, and is going to produce some big fantasy weeks. Deshaun Watson, with his time at Clemson, loved throwing to the slot wide receiver. They don't get much from the tight ends there. Kiki Kuti is a guy who I think is going to be, and if Will Fuller's out for any long stretch of time, Kuti's an immediate starter right now in fantasy if Fuller's out. But if not, he's a great wide receiver four type flex guy, you know, especially in games that you think could be high scoring games. Obviously, those are very hard to predict, but Kuti's a guy who can make things happen after the catch. You know, he can see 5-6 catches, and if he makes one big play on them, you know, and catches a couple of small stuff and get him the ball, he's going to be an effective fantasy player. So I like his long-term outlook as well. So there it is, the NFL Rookie Report for Week 4. Really looking forward to this week's upcoming college football games. I mentioned some of the ones and prospects I'm looking forward to in the tail of the tape. On the NFL side of it, obviously, you know, with four rookie quarterbacks starting, so many running backs heavily involved, so many wide receivers, you know, involved, and obviously hopefully waiting on a couple tight ends here to see more playing time and more snaps. So much to talk about each and every week in the NFL Rookie Report. So on behalf of Matt, who's hoping to make it back next week, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us, and we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.